Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. Got Rick and Tony. Gentlemen, let's jump right into the news. Big news for our friends up north, my friends up north in Canada. Alrighty, Justin Trudeau has finally resigned. The communists are out, best we can see. Well, there are probably some more of them in Parliament, but big news for Canadians. Incredibly unpopular guy. Rick, I'll let you take a stab at Trudeau first. I know you like kind of ripping on him.
Yeah, well, I mean, man, this is the best thing since maple syrup, right? Like, I mean, what delicious news. I mean, I think like we shouldn't get too ahead of ourselves, but maybe I think it was just last week we were talking about how disgraceful Trudeau was, and this week he resigned. So I don't know, maybe we were the final straw, right? Like, he knows the whole country hates him. He tunes into Bitcoin Banter for a little bit of light entertainment and Bitcoin news, and then he's just getting hammered on every single. I mean, we're a Bitcoin podcast, and we're hammering the guy, right? Like, I wouldn't want to be Justin Trudeau, but then who would? Who knows why he's just stuck around for so long, right? I would imagine under orders of Mr. Klaus Schwab, right? And he places all his puppets in these governments. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, whilst I think that's absolutely tremendous news for Canada, sometimes these stories still irk me, right? Like, it irks me to watch this man on his podium get to basically resign and walk off into the sunset, probably with loads of money stuffed in his pockets with no real consequences, right? Like, you know, this is what happens. This is what happened to a load of people who were in power during the COVID pandemic in the UK. You know, they got caught with dodgy contracts and this and that, but yet they still just sail off into the sunset with no consequences. So, you know, still a bit frustrating that he's seemingly going to get away with it, but we'll see. Maybe his predecessors will come after him or something like that. The last thing I'll say about the man is that, you know, even his resignation speech is enough to make your skin crawl, right? There was a moment during it where he said he listed his greatest achievements as, one, supporting Ukraine, so basically printing a load of money and sending it to another country, his COVID-19 policy, which, I mean, if anybody remembers what Trudeau was up to during that, was mind-boggling, like basically branding like kids and truckers as terrorists and blocking people's bank accounts. It got really weird in Canada, right? His other achievements he listed was fighting climate change. So, you know, on his 9-year crusade, one of the things he did best was try and fight against a gas that is only 0.04% of the atmosphere. So, you know, what a nut job. And then to really stick the boot in, he says he's proud of getting the economy ready for the future when, you know, Canada's facing record inflation and Canadians are struggling. So I think these people genuinely are sociopathic enough that they do this to like rub it in your face, right? Like, he's been ruling like a tyrant for 9 years. Now he's going to resign and he's off to live a nice life for himself. And yeah. I mean, look, tremendous news for Canadians though. Like, I don't want to take the shine off it, right? Like, I would be ecstatic if I was a Canadian right now.
Yeah, I think we need to, in the United States, begin protecting our northern border, because he's going to have to get out of there if he wants to continue living, I suspect. Tony, what is your reaction?
Yeah, I echo everything Rick said. I mean, it's a big day to congratulate Canadians for getting rid of that pathetic excuse of a thing, whatever you want to call him. But what's the celebration is only, you know, half-assed at this point. I mean, him having to just resign and walk away is not something really that's satisfying, considering everything he put the country through. This guy should be thrown in jail. Or if you really want to follow like justice in old Canadian history, he should be hung for all the crimes that he committed, all the illegal and heinous crimes that he committed under the guise of whatever excuses he came up with. Him was walking away and resigning, you know, with that arrogant, smug face. This is not how justice is served, right? I mean, the lesson here should serve as a as a warning to anyone else that this type of behavior will never be tolerated in a supposedly free country. And him walking away into the sunlight like this, living his happy old life, that's not doing it. At least the way I see it, yes, it's good they got rid of that clown because he was a total and epic failure on every, level of the spectrum. But if you really want to enforce justice, you go after him and make him pay back, one, everything that he stole, and you make him pay for all the crimes that he committed. Put him in jail. Send him into exile. He's not. He doesn't deserve walking out as if nothing happened. That's not justice. That's bullshit.
Yeah, and it's I completely agree with you. I think it's easy to be like, hey, at least we're done with him. Who cares? But the problem is, it sets a precedent for future leaders, and so you get bad leader after bad leader after bad leader because there's never any post rule consequence to any of this. And I think it's. I mean, his crimes are so evident and heinous, and his popularity indicates that it's time that they step up and say enough is enough. So that way, the next prime minister, who, by the way, I want to talk about briefly who that could be, realizes I have a job to do, and my job is to serve the Canadian people, and I can't be hanging my hat on funding wars in foreign countries through money printing and locking down our country and... so on and so forth. So, Rick, you shared this video with me, and I'd seen this before. It'd been a while. Let me pull this up real quick. So this is Pierre Poilievre. I don't know exactly how to say it, but let's watch this clip real quick.
On the topic, I mean, in terms of your sort of strategy currently, you're obviously taking the populist pathway.
What does that mean?
Well, appealing to people's more emotional levels, I would guess. Certainly you tap very strong ideological language quite frequently.
Like what?
Left wing, this and that. Right wing, it's that type of ideological thing.
I never really talk about left
but
or right.
Anyways,
really believe in that.
Okay, a lot of people would say that you're simply taking a page out of the. Donald Trump
like which people would say that?
Well, I'm sure a great many Canadians, but
like who?
I don't know who, but
well, you're the one who asked the question, so yeah. You must know somebody.
Okay, I'm sure there's some out there, but anyways, the point of this question is, I mean, why should Canadians trust you with their vote, given not just the sort of ideological inclination in terms of taking the page of Donald Trump's book, but
what are you
also,
talking about? What page? Can you give me a page? Give me the page. You keep saying
in terms,
that.
In terms of turning things quite dramatically in terms of Trudeau and the left wing and all of this, I mean, you make quite a, it's quite a play that you make on it. So I'm
not
just
sure.
Wondering.
I don't know what your question
okay.
is.
Okay, then forget that. Why should Canadians trust you with their vote?
Common sense.
Okay.
Common sense for a change. We're going to make common sense common in this country. We don't have any common sense in the current government. The guy prints $600 billion, grows our money supply by 32% in 3 years. That's growing the money 8 times faster than the economy. No wonder we have the worst inflation in 4 decades. I'm going to cap spending, cut waste, so that we can balance the budget and bring down inflation and interest rates. You'll want to be able to pay your mortgage again. You want to be able to afford rent. Then you have to vote for Pierre Poilievre, because I'm the only one with a common sense plan that will bring back the buying power of your paycheck.
All right, there you have it, Pierre Poilievre. All right, Rick, I think you probably can relate to this guy's position a bit more than anything Trudeau's ever said. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, first of all, Michael, like before this podcast, I got the same problem as you, right? I was like, how do you pronounce this guy's name? Possibly, but it sounds like you have to be French to make it sound nice. Like they make it sound real classy. It's like Poilievre or something, right? But look, that's a fascinating video that went viral quite a while ago. What I find fascinating about it is, imagine being at a cafe and overhearing someone talking like that. Right. I know that all of us would immediately think this guy must be a Bitcoiner. right? Because these are the sorts of things that we talk about nonstop, right? Like printing loads of money, driving inflation, the money supply expanding. And it's more nuanced and it's more informed than what you typically hear from most politicians, right? So there's an element of it that's like really refreshing. And I think in the clip that we played last week about Trudeau, he was bashing Poilievre about advising people maybe they look into Bitcoin and stack some Bitcoin, right? So, hey man, you know, right off the bat, signs are more promising. Like this guy actually seems to have an IQ slightly higher than room temperature, like Trudeau, right? So that's always nice. The thing is though, right? And listen, you know, there is tinfoil inside this hat. Because, you know, I've reached a point in my life where I've learned better than to trust any politicians, right? So I'm always looking for, well, what does this all really mean? I mean, there is a big omission in his little rant there, which is, you know, his solution, his common sense plan that he talks about is he's going to cut spending and cut waste. Well, you know, I've heard that from every politician, every election cycle in every country since I was old enough to understand what they were talking about, right? So that's not really anything new. What he doesn't address is the big elephant in the room, which is, you know, the central banking cartel and the ability to print money out of thin air, right? He stops short of that. He says we're going to cap sort of spending and we're going to bring down interest rates. But the other thing with bringing down interest rates is, well, you know, isn't that going to also contribute to expanding the money supply, Pierre? So, you know, look, I'm not saying that he won't be better than Trudeau. I mean, that's, you know, pretty much anyone on the planet would be better than Trudeau. But he's still a politician. I still don't think he targets the heart of the matter as precisely as I would like to see a politician do. And at the end of the day, you've got to look out for yourself. Like none of these politicians, they're not coming to save you. You know, the fiat experiment is coming to an end. The politicians have no control over those outcomes, and you cannot be holding Canadian dollars or any fiat when this inflection point comes. You have to have figured out Bitcoin, and you have to have some. So, good news in general, but listen, root for yourself and look after your own interests, because I think shit's about to get really wild over the next 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. Tony, I know you agree with that last comment from Rick, and you also lived in Canada for a couple of years, I think, as a teenager. What's your reaction to Pierre's, I'm not going to say his last name, Pierre's comments on inflation? Poilievre.
Well, he's definitely an upgrade from that baboon, you know, but he's still, at the end of the day, like Rick said, a politician. The thing is, you know, With guys like us, you know, once you click with Bitcoin, you automatically start vibing at a different frequency. Like you see the world genuinely from a different lens where none of these people matter. Like in my head, they don't even exist, even though they're just noise. You know, they're just like nuisances, like a fly buzzing, you know, that you just have to deal with. But once you understand Bitcoin and you adapt to that world and you figure out how to make it work for you, even though we're not yet living on a Bitcoin standard, then, you know, like none of these people matter. I mean, of course, he's not going to come in and, you know, tell you we're throwing out the Canadian dollar and adopting the Bitcoin standard. I mean, that would be, you know, the perfect scenario. But he's still a politician. The concept of the separation of money and state, I don't think has really sunk in any politician's head. They all think they're going to use Bitcoin somehow to make their local toilet paper better. This is what the general consensus is amongst all of them, whether it's Trump, whether it's him, whether it's most governments, because they want to remain in power, right? I mean, Bitcoin was not created to keep these people in power. It was created to completely format them and throw them out and replace them by a system that doesn't need anyone. And so we have to live through that transition. So those that are Bitcoin friendly will fast track the adoption of the general population, which have absolutely no idea what's going on about anything other than, you know, complaining amongst themselves that they can't afford a can of sardines anymore. But, you know, I mean, it's going to take time. I mean, you want someone to, from a politics point of view, the best thing they can do is just get out of the way, you know, like let Bitcoin do its thing. You stay in your corner, take care of the economy, take care of the country. Don't meddle in businesses that don't concern you and that you certainly don't understand. and let the innovation speak for itself. At some point, you will, you know, bend the knee and understand that your control of the money is no longer a thing. It's no longer you can do, and it's no longer needed, because there is a system that, you know, runs by itself based on truth that you and no one else can corrupt. And that is really the world that we want to, you know, fast track as much as possible.
Perfect. I think we've given these politicians enough airtime. Let's move on to Nazi ties to Credit Suisse ran deeper than was known, hidden files revealed. So if you look down the second paragraph of the article, it says a cache of client files stamped American blacklist. It was a designation for those financing and trading with Nazis or Axis partners. I was actually just reading the chapter this morning in Gradually Then Suddenly by Parker Lewis, where he talked about Bitcoin is not for criminals. And I think this is another glaring example. What were we talking about in the last month or so? Like JP Morgan or UBS, someone had like some major money laundering penalty, or maybe it was TD Bank, like Toronto Dominion. But anyway, the banking cartel continues to commit crimes. And Tony, this probably comes as no shock to you, but I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Well, I mean, it's a fact now that the whole fiat system is it's an international crime ring, right? I mean, they're all a bunch of thieves collaborating on the same theft. So it's no surprise to me that secrets of the past, you know, that were once heavily guarded, you know, with threats of death and guns and all that stuff. Well, you know, now, you know, eventually every lie, you know, and every crime has an expiry date. And it seems to me that, you know, we are living in a, you know, at a date and point in time where all these things are surfacing and they're going to get exposed and eventually, you know, get dealt with properly, hopefully. What do you want me to tell you, man? I mean, the fiat system is a system that was designed to steal, censor, and control. So the nature of stealing and hiding and committing crimes is just inherent to the product. And so it being exposed, thanks to most likely something like Bitcoin that has, you know, woken up people to the reality behind money, is powering all of this. And I'm happy about this. Hopefully in our lifetime, we see a world where all these people are dealt with properly and this whole Ponzi is completely destroyed and never allowed to be rebuilt again.
Absolutely. Rick.
Yeah, I mean, you know, similar to Tony, like what is there really to say other than, you know, banks, you know, like you were looking for examples, right, of banks that had been involved in all sorts of drug cartel rackets. And I mean, you know, pick a name. There's HSBC, there's TD America Bank, like all of these places, if you dig deep enough, they'll all be working with criminals and shipping dodgy money around. I mean, you know, there's a lot of evidence to suggest even the CIA were the ones bringing the cocaine into America, right? And hey, listen, talk about banks helping Nazis, right? Let's not get started on Operation Paperclip and see how much your government was interested in maybe bringing some clever Nazi scientists over to work in the US. So I've reached that point where, you know, nothing surprises me anymore, right? This is not particularly salacious sort of news. Banks are not particularly your friend. I suppose the interesting or the ironic thing about all this is that, like, they KYC us, don't they, with all our fiat banking rails to make sure that we're not committing terrorism or anti-money laundering or whatever nonsense, right? And, you know, if you go and try and take a few thousand dollars out of the bank, they ask you all sorts of questions about what you're going to do with it. But if it's Nazi gold, hey, listen, no problem. We can make that disappear. So the idea that these rules are there to protect you and catch criminals is laughable. Those rules are there to control you, and they waive them when criminals are involved. So, yeah, you know, it's nice to see actual bad guys getting caught once in a while. And Bitcoin's going to put an end to a lot of these sort of secret backdoors and little agreements that they have with each other. So, yeah, long may it continue.
All righty, let's move on to Operation Chokepoint 2.0. So this was some, I guess, new information that came out recently. So the FDIC told banks pause all crypto asset related activity. So, for example, in this case, a bank wanted to offer customers the option to transact with Bitcoin, and the FDIC basically said no. Man, this is the stuff from, it's like, for people who still believe we operate in a free market, I mean, this sort of news should just shatter any delusion that you still have that this is capitalism just playing out, you know, the invisible hand, because it's the government hand finding its way into everything. Tony, why don't you take this first? And again, I know this is to be expected. I mean, to Rick's point, we're not surprised by literally anything anymore. But what do you think this says about sort of, I guess, the government's maybe fear of Bitcoin and what it means for them?
Yeah, I mean, these are desperate attempts to remain relevant. I mean, it's crystal clear that, you know, they've lost the war against Bitcoin. It's crystal clear. This is just like pathetic attempts just to try to slow it down in whatever, you know, whichever way possible, but it's not going to work. I mean, now you've got, you know, a Bitcoin friendly president that's about to start working in about what, a few days now. And he's probably going to strike down most of this rubbish or overturn all of it. And so banks getting into Bitcoin, even though it's not, you know, something I'm a fan of, I guess it's unavoidable. And they're going to get into it because there's big business to be built on top of it. And so until we move into a pure Bitcoin world, banks are going to be here, you know, to enjoy the ride, I guess, as well. I mean, you don't want to custody your Bitcoin with any bank, of course, but, you know, you need somebody to have done the work to understand this. Most people have done nothing and will just go with the flow just for the sake of convenience. And so the banks will be there waiting for them, you know, to siphon service fees and whatever else they can, you know, from them. But for the FDIC to restrict banks from doing this, this is just like, you know, it's just a petty move that has a very short expiration date.
Yeah, Rick.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's no surprise, is it? Like, you know, they were always going to try and fight against Bitcoin and try and remain relevant. I mean, here, look, here's maybe a take from a bit left field, but like, I love it, right? Let's do Choke Point 3.0 and then 4.0, and let's stop the banks using Bitcoin in any way, shape, or form, right? Let's cut the umbilical cord, right? Let's say, well, yeah, actually, no, that's cool. Like, you can't play with Bitcoin because you're a bank, and actually, we don't need you anymore anyway, so you're kind of irrelevant. So, yeah, and I don't know, like, I struggle to find the words to express how much I dislike banks in general, right? So if they don't want to come and play, all the better. If that means their demise happens sooner, great. If it means that customers find a little bit of friction in the fiat system and think, God, you know, it's so much easier with Bitcoin, great. And if they figure out ways to use Bitcoin without touching their bank again, great. So yeah, I mean, if banks want to kill themselves even quicker, then yeah, certainly wouldn't be one to get in their way. But like Tony says, you know, I think a lot of this stuff will start getting overturned slowly but surely. You know, the politicians are clearly getting pulled into Bitcoin's orbit. What they do next is the really interesting question, right? Because I think Bitcoin's a real threat to their national currencies. And I don't think the penny has quite dropped yet what that means in these politicians' minds, because it is going to bring chaos, right? Like, you know, if Bitcoin succeeds and fiat dies, that's going to be messy. So who knows what they're going to do next? But yeah, it's no surprise that they had a little bit of a scrap with us.
Yeah. As a libertarian, I don't like any of this government intervention, but I agree with you that sometimes they shoot themselves in the foot often enough and it helps us win faster. So alrighty, last one. We've got a Chinese hack of U.S. telecoms compromised more firms than previously known. I think this might have been one that we had talked about a few months ago, and it sounds like the intrusion went deeper. In addition to deep intrusions into AT&T and Verizon, hackers pierced other networks belonging to Lumen Technologies and T-Mobile. So, Tony, why don't you tell people why they need a privacy phone?
Well, privacy phones removes you completely from, you know, from that system. With a privacy phone, one of the major advantages of it is that you can buy yourself an anonymous SIM card, pay for it, you know, using crypto, and it works internationally. You pay as you go, works great. But you cannot be a victim of things like SIM swap attacks when you are using a degooled phone with an anonymous SIM card, because technically you don't exist on any database. So whatever hack happens, you know, you're pretty much shielded from it, because again, you're like, nobody knows it's you unless, you know, you've disclosed this somewhere. But, you know, follow good security protocols, and that should generally never happen. With the case of these hacks, it's really hard to know the details of it, because, you know, they don't provide much other than, you know, he said, she said type of thing. The U.S. government, you know, accuses China. China says, no, it's complete rubbish. So then truth is somewhere in the middle, right? There's no way of really diving deep into figuring out who's lying and who's not. As far as I'm concerned, they're both lying. I'm still of the belief that there's some sort of fabricated cyber attack coming to justify whatever, you know, solution that will miraculously show up 2 days later. So whenever I read these headlines, you know, it's just like, whatever, man. Like, it's just like, I'm so desensitized to them by now that I just stay focused on what matters, is protecting myself and protecting those that I work with, giving them, you know, the best recommendations that I know of in order to protect themselves tech-wise, privacy-wise, and what have you. And those that do the work, you know, and adopt these secure protocols, generally speaking, are better off than those who don't.
Yeah. Rick, you have any final comments on that?
No, not particularly. Just wanted to echo like Tony's comments that the details are scant, right? Like, I skimmed through that article trying to find out, well, what did they hack? What were the consequences? The only really thing I could find of any significance was, you know, it seems like they were going after like people of interest. So my guess is, you know, maybe it is a state-sponsored attack and they're trying to, you know, get access to influential people and read their text messages or who knows what. But there was one thing in the article, right, when I read it, that like it just stuck out like a sore thumb. It almost didn't feel relevant to the article itself. I just want to read this to you, right? Because like when you read it, your eyes should widen up, right? Because right in the middle is a paragraph and it says, U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan told telecoms and tech executives at a secret White House meeting in 2023 that Chinese hackers had the ability to shut down dozens of ports, power grids, and other infrastructure at will. And I'm kind of thinking, well, first of all, I didn't really understand why that was in the middle of a thing talking about hacking people's phones. And second of all, I was thinking maybe that should have been the main topic of the article, right? The fact that apparently Chinese hackers can just turn off America somehow. And I don't know, I don't want to play too much conspiracy games, but like Tony talks about it all the time, right? Like, what is this next big cataclysm that's awaiting? And you keep seeing these little seeds of ideas being placed everywhere, right? Like, you know, some big cyber nonsense is going to come. And I guess the nature of war has shifted as well, right? Away from maybe everyone's scared about a bomb dropping on their head and they should maybe be more scared about, you know, the water not working or your electricity getting shut off. So, yeah, crazy stuff. Like Tony says, what more can you do than try and protect yourself, become maybe a bit more self-sufficient, certainly take full control of your own money, you know, use a SIM card that's not connected to your ID, you know, like there's no way to protect yourself from all the craziness in the world 100%, but there's a lot of things that you can do to make sure that you're not the soft target, right? And that you've got a chance of living the life you want, having some privacy and having a chance of building a successful life. So yeah, if anything, don't let these news stories scare you. Let them maybe give you some motivation to say, hang on, there's some steps I can take here to be in a better position for me and my family.
You nailed it. Talk about burying the lead. Jeez. We got bigger problems than a few telecoms, I guess. Hey, last thing here, we've got Twitter and Cash App founder Jack Dorsey's new Bitcoin wallet, BitKey, is now available on Amazon. So the intent here is never for us to just berate any particular product by name, but to give caution that you're going to be able to find old hardware wallets on eBay or Amazon or wherever. There are plenty of resellers that people have access to and use on a daily basis. Tony, maybe just give like a quick explanation as to why you shouldn't be buying your hardware wallet on Amazon.
Man, I'm really shocked when I read this headline to see that someone like Jack Dorsey is putting his products on the worst possible place to sell, like Amazon. You never, ever buy a product like this that's storing generational wealth in a place like Amazon. Like that's just insane. I'm sure his intentions are for it to reach mass adoption, like to cater to as many people as possible, make it as readily available. But holy shit, man, the trade-offs that are at play here are huge. Never buy a product unless it's directly from the manufacturer. I don't care who it is. You know, I mean, even the products that we don't recommend, at least, you know, you can only buy them from the manufacturer. This on Amazon is like a whole other level of crazy. Stay away from it. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. And I think the reason is because you don't really know exactly where it's coming from, who could be tampering with it. The intermediaries that sit between the manufacturer and it arriving on your front porch. Rick, you have anything you want to say about that?
I think Tony nails it, right? Like, I mean, to be fair to some of these guys, I'm not 100% sure. Like, I went and checked them and they did go to like, I found some Trezors, I found some other stuff, right? And they did seem to link to like official Amazon stores of those brands. But what I'm not 100% on is whether they ship direct from the manufacturer and just give Amazon a cut, or whether it's going through some fulfilled by Amazon, you know, warehouse solution, which a lot of brands do. But I mean, either way, the advice stands. Like, why take the risk? Why worry about it, right? Just if you want to buy a product like that, just go to the website. Just go to the company's website, right? As one option. Better yet, if you can buy it without using like a KYC card or something, right? So if you go to a Bitcoin conference and they have an official stand and you can pick it up in person, that's a good option. But Amazon, I think, is the last place you should be looking to buy anything Bitcoin related if you can, you know, well, you can avoid it. So do avoid it.
Absolutely. And for everyone listening, we appreciate you tuning in. Do us a favor, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast, schedule some time with a member of our team. We can talk to you about the right kind of hardware devices to buy, where to buy them. We would love to help you with a proper Bitcoin self-custody setup where you are the only person with control of your keys. We also help with online privacy. As Tony talked about, privacy phones, there are hackers and there's more surveillance than any of us can possibly even fathom out there. So make sure you check that out. And of course, we've got Plan B residency options as well. Again, thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We'd love to have a chance to chat with you. Gentlemen, thank you as always. I look forward to this every week and I'm ready to chat again in a few days. Who knows what the news will be then?
Thank you, Michael. It's always great, man.
Thanks, Mike.
Cheers, guys.